Good morning, and on behalf of the Office of Community Engagement at Syracuse University, welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge with respect the Onondaga Nation, Fire Keepers of the Haudenosaunee, the Indigenous people on whose ancestral land Syracuse University now stands. It is my pleasure to be the moderator this morning. This morning, we are really pleased to have with us to talk about the Center on Diversity and Inclusion at Syracuse University, two of our distinguished faculty. Christine Ashby, who is Professor of Inclusive Special Education and Disability Studies at Syracuse University, is with us. She teaches across all levels of the program, from undergraduate students to doctoral students. Christy coordinates the undergraduate inclusive elementary and special education program and the 1-6 and 7-12 inclusive special education master's programs. She is also the director of the Center on Disability and Inclusion and communications initiatives within the center, which conducts research and provides training and technical assistance related to communication and inclusion for individuals that type to communicate. Christy's teaching and research focus on inclusive education broadly and with special emphasis on supports for neurodivergent students, communicative diversity, disability studies, and inclusive teacher preparation. Christy's work has been published in journals including Equity and Excellence in Education, the International Journal of Inclusive Education, Disability and Society, Teacher Education and Special Education, and Intellectual and Developmental Disability. Her co-edited book, Enacting Change from Within, Disability Studies Meets Teaching and Teacher Education, explores how disability studies can inform the practical work of teachers. She is also the co-editor of Excelsior, Leadership in Teaching and Learning. Our second guest, Beth Myers, is the Lawrence B. Tashoff Assistant Professor of Inclusive Education, Executive Director of the Tashoff Center for Inclusive Higher Education, and Assistant Director of the Center on Disability and Inclusion. Beth oversees Inclusive U, a model program for college students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Beth has been awarded grants from the U.S. Department of Education and from New York State for her work on transition and post-secondary programs for students with intellectual disabilities, the Mid-State Regional Partnership Center, the School Age and Early Childhood Family and Community Engagement Centers, and Pre-Employment and Transition Services for Students with Disabilities, serving students, families, teachers, and school districts. Beth serves on the Families Research Team for Children with Autism and Vision Impairments. Her book, Autobiography on the Spectrum, Disrupting the Autism Narrative, was published in 2019 by Teachers College Press. This work won the Ralph C. Preston Award for Scholarship in Teaching, contributing to social justice and educational equity. Beth currently serves on the National Down Syndrome Society Inclusion Committee and is the founding executive editor of the Journal of Inclusive Post-Secondary Education. Beth was awarded the Central New York Business Journal's Businesswoman of the Year in Higher Education Award in 2018 and the Syracuse University Meredith Early Teaching Recognition in 2021. So welcome to Christy and Beth.
Thank you so much. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. And we are so glad to be here with you this morning. We do look forward to your comments and questions at the conclusion of our comments. So we've titled our comments this morning, The Center on Disability and Inclusion at Syracuse University, Impact at Syracuse and Beyond. You already heard about us, so I can skip over the introduction. So thank you. That was way more than we would have said about ourselves. So thanks. Today, we are here today partly in alignment with the recognition of International Day of Persons with Disabilities, which will be recognized tomorrow, December 3rd. The annual observance of the International Day of Disabled Persons was proclaimed in 1992 by the United Nations General Assembly, with the goal of promoting the rights and well-being of persons with disabilities in all spheres of society and development, and to increase awareness of the situation of persons with disabilities in every aspect of political, social, economic, and cultural life. We are honored to be talking with you today about the work of the CDI in solidarity with that vision. The 2021 theme for the International Day is leadership and participation toward an inclusive, accessible, and sustainable post-COVID-19 world. I have to say, with the news this morning, it feels a little strange to be calling it a post-COVID world. I think we're still very much in the middle of a COVID world, but we hope as we move out of this that we do so in collective, community-based, and inclusive ways. So I want to start with just a little bit of current context. We're not going to talk much about statistics today because we want to focus on the work of our center and what we're doing around disability. But I do think it's important to recognize, in alignment with International Day of Disability, that about 1 billion people in the world live with disability. That's 15% of the world's population. 80% of those people are in developing countries. So as we think about issues related to disability and inclusion, we need to be thinking globally and intersectionally. Here in the United States, 61 million adults, about 26% of the nation's population, live with disability. In our local context, because both Beth and I are educators at heart, and that's a big part of our work, 21% of students in Syracuse City School District are identified with disabilities, far above the national average. And I always think it's important to recognize that when we think about diversity, disability is the one identity group everyone will eventually belong to if we live long enough. It's the group we all get membership in, and it is vitally important for us to consider disability as an aspect of diversity. But unfortunately, disability is often left out of discussions related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And even when it is included, too often our approaches to disability are focused on cure, remediation, reduction of harm, minimizing impact, rather than thinking about disability as a valued identity, culture, source of pride and innovation, something to be conserved and centered. So we are really excited when we saw the list of the core priorities for this year for International Day of Disability, because they align really nicely with the work we do as well. So first of all, centering the experiences of people with disabilities as we move into a post-COVID world. What does it mean to put disability at the center rather than having it at the periphery? How do we think about universal accessibility and universal design rather than after the fact accommodation and support? Thinking about disability and access from a human rights perspective rather than an individualistic have to earn the right perspective. International Day of Disability is also focusing this year on the right of people to live free of violence and free of bullying. And we see real connections to this when we think about impacts on socio-emotional learning in schools as students are coming back together. Near and dear to my heart is listening to the voices of children and adolescents as experts on their experience. They're not just receptacles for us to be teaching, but instead sources of knowledge, wisdom, and creativity. And then a real focus this year, which actually aligns with a lot of our initiatives, has been working to reduce inequities and inequality through technology and innovation. So looking at assistive technology, but also inclusive design. And we've done some of that work over the last few years and have plans to continue that. This focus on centering the experiences of people with disabilities is at the heart of the historical centers upon which the CDI was built. And it continues to guide our work as we move into this new era. So what is the CDI? There are a lot of acronyms at SU. We are well aware of that. We fit in with the sort of alphabet soup that there is at SU, but we are the CDI, which is the Center on Disability and Inclusion. We're housed in the School of Education, and we are a disability-related research center that we work to develop and implement initiatives promoting inclusion of people with disabilities in all aspects of school and society, locally and globally. And while we are located in a school of ed, and so obviously have deep commitment to teacher education and leader education, we also see the focus on disability across the lifespan, including higher education, community living, and employment. But it's really important to recognize that while the CDI as its own or as its umbrella center officially launched in 2020, we build on a storied legacy of scholarship and activism in the School of Ed in the areas of disability rights, deinstitutionalization, community integration, communication access, school inclusion at every level. Syracuse University and the School of Education have played vital roles in many key movements related to disability justice and inclusion. We feel especially important to note right now that as we look at this image on the screen, you gave us your dimes, now we want our rights. We are on the 50th anniversary of the Center on Human Policy in the School of Education, and that is a really momentous occasion for us to be acknowledging. So just a few examples of disability leadership historically before we talk about what the CDI is currently. Under the leadership of folks like Burton Blatt, we were really at the heart of the deinstitutionalization movement and the movement to have people come out of congregate settings and into community support. Syracuse University and the School of Ed has been central to the development of inclusive education locally, nationally, and globally, starting right here in Syracuse City, with work done at Ed Smith on inclusion of students with autism, starting back in the 70s and 80s. We were the first School of Education to require dual certification. No one could leave the School of Ed with just an elementary education degree. Starting in the early 90s, we required students to work towards both certifications, really promoting the idea that students should be able to teach all kids. We were the first disability studies program in the nation. We've housed numerous centers that work to advance disability rights and inclusive education with families in higher education, in teacher preparation, and in early childhood. So we build on this really long history and work that has been foundational to disability studies, disability rights, and disability justice. And I'm going to turn it over to Beth to talk a little bit about our historical and current work.
Thank you, Christy. That was a great introduction. I do feel so fortunate to get to do this work and to do this work that's built on this legacy, this 50-year legacy. It's one of the reasons I came to Syracuse, because I've long admired the work that Syracuse did around disability and inclusion. And much of that work was really started more than 50 years ago, really looking at the work of the Center on Human Policy, which was founded in 1971 by Burton Blatt. And it was really looking at widespread abuse of and discrimination against people with disabilities. This center, which is now part of the Centers on Disability and Inclusion, it was really instrumental in the disability rights movement. Many of you in the community are familiar with the work on Center on Human Policy. Also, the Institute on Communication and Inclusion, which really was founded in 1991 and is the nation's leading resource for information for individuals who type to communicate. And also the Teshoff Center, which is very near and dear for me, the Teshoff Center for Inclusive Higher Education. The Teshoff Center does research, program development, and technical assistance to support students with intellectual disabilities to go to college. And it is also the home of the Inclusive U program, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So this is just to give you a little bit more of a picture of what is really included in the Center on Disability and Inclusion. We do have, it really is this umbrella structure. The Center on Disability and Inclusion is bringing together all of these other centers and projects to really push forward the work of disability at Syracuse University and beyond. So it includes the Teshoff Center for Inclusive Higher Ed, the Inclusion and Communication Initiatives, which are really have grown out of the Institute on Communication and Inclusion, the work of the Center on Human Policy, the new work of the Mid-State Partnerships. So this is the work that previously was SUPAC, ECDC, and maybe known in the community under some of those names, but now is the School Age FACE Center and the Early Childhood FACE Center under some new language from New York State, and also the Regional Partnership Center. We also have Pre-Employment Transition Services, which is called PRE-ETS. We have some information about that in a minute, some teacher and leader development initiatives, and academic program collaborations that we do with other schools and colleges at Syracuse and beyond. So this is a slide really just to talk a little bit about the Center on Disability and Inclusion and our vision and goals. We're really here to push forward an agenda focused on individuals with disability and their full inclusion in schools and society. So this means all of this work goes into that. We're really focused on research in disability and inclusion because we are a research center. We're also focused on access to general education in inclusive settings, in inclusive schools, in inclusive classrooms, in school districts. We're looking at improving outcomes for students with disabilities, particularly related to post-secondary and employment. We provide technical assistance, particularly to school districts, but also to other colleges and universities looking at outcomes. We're also dedicated to supporting communication for individuals with disabilities, particularly individuals with significant disabilities who need access to alternative communication. We have a focus on issues of equity and anti-racism, culturally sustaining pedagogy and inclusion, and the intersection of all of those. We have a commitment to full community integration and participation for people with disabilities. And we also work to prepare pre-service teachers to be leaders in inclusive education. We are a school of education, and it's critical for us to be really thinking about the next generation of teachers. So now let's focus a little bit about the impact in the Syracuse University community. So we're going to talk about impact in the Syracuse University community, and then impact in the local and regional community, and then national and international reach. And I get to talk first about Inclusive U, always makes me very happy. Here we have some of our Inclusive U students and one of our student mentors. Inclusive U is a federally recognized model program for students with intellectual disability here at Syracuse University. It started in its current iteration in 2014 with just 14 students. And now we have 100 students with intellectual disability fully included in the Syracuse University campus. These students are fully included in coursework, fully included in academics, fully included in social participation on the campus, in employment preparation and in internships. Students can live in the fully included in the residence halls and have a college experience like other students. This is the first generation of college students with intellectual disability. This is a new field. This is groundbreaking work, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. We're also partnering with a new project called Intelligence Plus Plus. This is our inclusive design project where we're looking at working across the university with all other schools and colleges and programs to think about collaborative design and working with VPA and the Launchpad to develop teams of students that include individuals with intellectual disability on those teams to solve problems related to disability and to create the next generation of entrepreneurs who will solve problems related to disability. And it's a really exciting inclusive design program. Inclusive U has now had two Remembrance Scholars. I'm really proud of the university for thinking about this highest honor that the university has in such an inclusive way. We also have over 150 matriculated Syracuse University students who work with our program and work with our students. They serve as peer partners. They serve as campus mentors. They serve as residential mentors living with our students in the residence halls. They serve as student support assistants. They work with our students in classes, after class, in clubs and organizations, in the dining halls, and internships. It's a really robust program that I think benefits not just the students who are enrolled in Inclusive U, but the university as a whole.
In the short time since we've launched in 2020, and yes, we launched during the pandemic, it was an interesting time to start a new center. But it created some interesting opportunities for us. But we sought to engage fully with the life of the campus and collaborating with different centers and units around campus to really integrate our work with the larger discussions around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So just these are a few examples. We've collaborated with the Lender Center for Social Justice, the Landscape and Urban Education Lecture Series, Orange Central, Blackstone Launchpad, which you just heard about, Disability Cultural Center. These are a few events from the last year. We were part of, I hope some of you participated in our two-day symposium on policed bodies, looking at race, disability, and justice in schools and communities. That was done collaboratively with the Lender Center for Social Justice. We were part of Orange Central and featured the amazing documentary, And They Were Roommates, which features the Inclusive U mentorship program and was made by School of Education alumna Kylie Walters. We screened that this year with it's a really outstanding opportunity to bring folks together and hear about Inclusive U from the perspective of students who have experienced it. And then just a few weeks ago, we collaborated with the Landscape on Urban Ed Lecture Series to bring in Bao Phi, who is a poet and children's book author that writes about the immigration experience and also ties in themes of neurodiversity and language access. And one of our recent initiatives that we're really excited about is our Neurodiversity at SU project. It focuses on supports for neurodiverse and autistic students and at SU, building on the success of Inclusive U in providing innovative student-centered programming and support for autistic students, and our School of Ed longtime history of work on disability rights, communication, advocacy, and universal design. This new program broadens our focus to really encompass matriculated undergraduate and graduate students at SU. So thanks to the financial support of the Siebold family, we are working to provide additional resources, mentorship, and support for student organization and advocacy that builds on and complements the work of the already existing Disability Cultural Center and the Center for Disability Resources. So really working in concert with these currently existing centers on campus to broaden our reach, to really address student-driven need, and bring an opportunity for communities to come together. We've just launched this fall, and we're really excited by the possibilities for focusing on neurodiversity and disability pride as we think about how to make the most of your college experience. We are also having a significant impact in the local and regional community, so outside Syracuse University. And we want to highlight a couple of the specific ways that's happening. Obviously, one of the largest sources of impact right now for us in our local community is the Mid-State Partnership. As Beth mentioned, these are funded contracts with the New York State Education Department that are focused on improving outcomes for students with disabilities in pre-K through 12th grade settings. And this brings together the Regional Partnership Center, the School Age and Early Childhood Family and Community Engagement Centers. And we work with 51 school districts and 30 early childhood programs in Central New York, providing technical assistance, targeted learning opportunities, regional trainings, and deeply embedded support. So just to highlight from last year, we provided regional trainings to over 1,500 people from 90 different local educational organizations and community organizations. And we're providing embedded intensive on-site support in six schools and community and preschool settings. And in these places, we're there on the ground in the buildings, working with school district personnel to bring about the changes that are needed to improve outcomes for all students, but particularly students with disabilities.
We also have a New York State partnership with Access VR to provide pre-employment transition services for students with disabilities who are transition age. And so we're really looking at no-cost career services, no-cost career planning, really focused on these five areas: career exploration, workplace readiness skills, post-secondary options, self-advocacy, and work-based learning. And we work with students in six different counties for that. We also do state government engagement and advocacy with individuals with disabilities in the community and at the university. We've done legislative briefings. You can see in some of our photos here, we've done some work and had some visits with Senator May and Senator Manion. We did a project called The Big Shift, and that was considering issues in mental health, schools and online education during the pandemic and post as we shifted during the pandemic. We work with OPWDD and supporting the Medicaid waiver and needs of individuals with disabilities in the Medicaid waiver. And also we do work with New York State Ed, a significant amount of work with New York State Ed, and also Access VR and other state agencies.
When we think about local impact, one of the areas that we know is a real area of need is diversifying our teacher workforce. The teaching workforce in Central New York does not mirror the student population. That is not unique to Syracuse, but it is certainly a problem we are complicit in. And so one of our recent initiatives that we are launching this year is the Baldanza Fellows Program to recruit and retain diverse teachers. So this could have gone in the impact on the Syracuse community, but we really see the broader impact on changing the makeup of the teacher workforce. We through a generous donation from a School of Ed and Maxwell alum, a family that went to each, we've launched this new teacher pipeline program in collaboration and partnership with several local school districts. We are able to provide scholarships, full scholarships for future teachers from diverse and underrepresented groups to come into our master's programs in high needs areas, and then be hired on by these partner teachers to stay and teach in Central New York for several years. So the idea is we are building this in collaboration with school districts to help change the makeup of the teacher workforce and hope that this sparks more growth in diversifying our teacher body. So obviously we're really proud of our work we've done at SU and locally, but we are also technical assistance centers that do work nationally and internationally. And we want to highlight just a few things that we're working on and then look to the future. So the first is, as Beth said, the ICI has been providing technical assistance and training for folks who don't have reliable verbal speech for decades. We have providing introductory workshops, teaching people how to utilize different forms of technology so that they can be fully included in schools and in communities. And then the pandemic hit. And all of a sudden that got really complicated. But what we saw initially as a logistical challenge became a phenomenal opportunity for new forms of outreach. So during the last year and a half or so since we've been in this virtual world, we've done four introductory training workshops virtually. We have reached participants from 14 states and 5 countries, including Australia, Serbia, the UK. We've also, because our typing community and a lot of folks with disabilities felt very isolated during the pandemic, we started setting up virtual meetups that have been going on through the entire pandemic period. And we've brought together 45 typers from around the globe, mostly folks with autism and developmental disability, that come together. They do book readings, they share experiences, provide each other resources and support. And we've had people from 15 different states and 5 different countries. So really taking advantage of what the move to virtual has allowed us to do.
Yeah, I've also, I talked about some of our regional and state advocacy work, and now I also want to talk about our national engagement and advocacy work. We have taken students to Capitol Hill to advocate for inclusive education. We've also collaborated with the SU Alumni Association to hold events and discussions across the country on disability in education and also disability in the media. We've done work around Title IX advocacy for students with intellectual disabilities. And we've also provided amicus briefings to the Supreme Court around issues, significant issues in disability and inclusion. We have some really terrific national media recognition for education issues. We have been published in USA Today on issues related to COVID and athletics, in the Mighty, really looking at, we were rated as one of the top colleges and universities for students with autism, JABDU for inclusive education and equity, and two pieces, one in the HuffPost, which was about inclusive education, inclusive higher education, and our Inclusive U program, and a piece in the New York Times about our Inclusive U program. We also provide technical assistance for inclusive education. We serve on the National Down Syndrome Society. We run the National Journal of Inclusive Post-Secondary Education, a national conference on inclusive higher education. We work with the CEDAR Teacher Research Center. We are also the editors of the Excelsior Journal in Leadership in Teaching and Learning. We run the New York State Inclusive Higher Education Coalition and serve on the Think College Committee in Post-Secondary Education.
So you can see we've got our hands in a lot of places, but one of the things that we were really struggling with is we're doing so much. We really want to increase our research and dissemination output. And one of the things that was a goal for us when we first wrote the proposal to start the CDI was more robust engagement with postdoctoral and early career scholars. And we want to say we're really excited through a matching grant with SU's Office of Research and the Rob Teshuff Family Foundation. We are actually going to be hiring our first postdoc scholar in inclusive post-secondary and transition starting this year, which will really help us be able to further spread the word about inclusive education and specifically inclusive higher education. So hopefully you can see we bring together a lot of sort of strengths, and what we see as one of our key strengths is we're a connector with a variety of stakeholders and constituencies within SU and beyond. Beth and I are deeply rooted in this local community, but we really want our reach to be national and global as well. So starting here and moving out and really going back and forth between national interests and local interests. We bring a lot of expertise in disability and inclusion, and we're really excited to have been developing relationships with our local delegations to provide guidance and feedback on priorities that we should be considering. Focusing on disability across the whole lifespan, not just kids in school or not just adults, and then building on our really strong collaborative connections with schools through our teacher education programs, but also from work that we have done locally to kind of help build systems change efforts. But there's a lot still to do. So obviously, we're continuing in lots of efforts that we've already talked about. But as we move forward, we really want to explore the impact of COVID on students with disabilities and school personnel, with it keeping our focus on access to general education. Let us not slip back into more segregated ways of responding to what people are talking about as a perceived learning loss. So keeping a focus on inclusion and increasing access to inclusive education at all levels, including college. Working towards a communication bill of rights that ensures all students can use the communication methods of their choice. here on campus thinking about entrepreneurship and inclusive design and inclusive study abroad options, and then continuing to think about inclusive living and employment. So these are just some of the areas that we are looking to in the coming years. For more information, you can find out all about us at our website, disabilityinclusioncenter.syr.edu. And those are all of our links to our social media. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. But I believe now we get to turn it over for some discussion and questions, correct?
Thanks, Christy, and thanks, Beth. First question, could you talk a little bit about the impact of the COVID pandemic? Two ways. On students K through 12, and then also on the impact in terms of living and working for those post-secondary students who may be out in the world in more independent situations.
Sure, why don't I take the first half, Beth, and you wanna take the second half? So obviously COVID's had a tremendous impact on everyone, but for students with disabilities, it's been interesting. A lot of students lost access to services because when they moved to home instruction, access to the sort of related services and individualized supports just wasn't happening in the same way. There was also a high degree of isolation that students were experiencing. The flip side of that is we certainly know of students who found the move to remote actually quite comforting because there were things that were possible through remote instruction, having different kinds of supports at home, greater integration of technology. We all figured out how to use principles of universal design and access differently during the pandemic. And we hope is we take those tools that we learned and we bring them into in-person instruction so that as we bring students back into schools and they become more back in with peers, that we don't lose the things we learned, different ways to collaborate with families, different ways to interact with the community. So certainly COVID has had a tremendous impact. We are also hearing significant increases and concerns related to mental health, social emotional learning, and behavior in schools as students are struggling with their own responses to this time, but figuring out how to come back together after not being in school for a year and a half. And so we really are hearing a lot of concerns from school personnel and families about concerns with just behavior and helping people move forward really positively. Beth, do you want to talk a little bit about the other issues post-secondary?
Sure. So this particular question, I think, is thinking about employment and community integration, independent living, some other issues, thinking about post-secondary transition and people who live in the community. So when we're thinking about people with disabilities, many of them are facing the same things as everyone else, right? Issues around social isolation, issues around access to healthcare, mental health access, many of the issues that may be the same as others. But I think there have been some unique challenges for individuals with disabilities in the community as well. One of the issues that we're seeing for this particular group is the drop in the employment rate. And we're not seeing that rate recover as quickly for people with, particularly with intellectual disabilities coming out of post-secondary. We had a very high employment rate in post-secondary after post-secondary education, and we're looking at sort of national numbers in this, and a lot of that employment rate has not quite recovered yet. And it could be related to a variety of factors, some of which is related to the fact that some people with significant disabilities have other health factors where they might not be able to go back into their employment, places of employment yet. Because of other health factors. So there are some issues, particularly around employment, but there are other mitigating factors. One is access to transportation. We know that access to transportation is a long time issue for people with disabilities, particularly outside of urban areas. But now with a labor shortage, we're seeing access to transportation become even worse particularly for people with disabilities. So, sometimes we're seeing lots of different factors that come into this piece. So we are seeing a drop in employment, a need for community resources, continued social isolation for people with disabilities, and then the increased need for both healthcare and mental health services.
Thank you. We have a question. Could you speak more about the center's relationship with the Syracuse City School District and the programs that are available for younger students? And at what age do those programs start?
Sure. So obviously, sometimes it's hard to tease out what is, where our relationships with Syracuse City are about School of Education versus CDI versus some of our grant-funded projects. We have multiple collaborations with Syracuse City. Beth and I are also both proud city school parents. My kids are graduates of Nottingham High School, and Beth's are all firmly ensconced in Ed Smith.
I have all four at Ed Smith this year. I have K through eight.
So we feel really deep personal and professional commitments to this work. And so certainly our direct center-based connections with Syracuse City happen in a couple of ways. We have work with them related to communication and inclusion, where we're working directly with teachers at all levels and support providers to help support communication access, mostly with folks who type to communicate. We have this, the pre-employment transition services. We are working with multiple schools in Syracuse City, mostly, this is mostly high schools. We're working with several of the high schools, working directly with youth ages 14 to 21 on advocacy and work-based learning skills. Our work with the Mid-State Partnership, Syracuse City is one of our focus districts, which means a lot of our time, of our staff's time, is really spent working on areas of literacy, behavior, transition, specially designed instruction. So we have specialists in each of those areas. Obviously, we also have other collaborations with Syracuse City through the School of Education and through other programs. I'm part of an ongoing equity team that has looked at access to athletics, fine arts, and accelerated classes for students. And we place a lot of our pre-service teachers do their placement experiences in Syracuse City. That's really important to us, that every student who graduates from Syracuse University and the School of Education has worked in Syracuse City at some point in their program. That's an important goal of ours. So there are lots of ways that folks, that we can get involved. And another one we should mention that's really important is our on-campus collaboration, which is part of KSHOP Center. So these are students who are Syracuse City students still being served in the public school, but they are coming to Syracuse University with to have an inclusive on-campus experience along with Inclusive U. And that's been a long-standing collaboration that dates back actually to the early 2000s. Beth, do you want to add anything?
I think you covered a lot of it. The on-campus program I just wanted to mention is part of the Inclusive U program, and those students are dually enrolled. So they're enrolled in both Syracuse University and the Syracuse City School District simultaneously. So that's a really fantastic partnership, and we've really grown that collaboration over the last 2 years as well.
I would say the one other comment I would add is if there are things that you think would be really helpful, particularly for younger students, we welcome that sort of feedback. If there's a program or a project that you would love to see, those are the kinds of collaborations we are eager to hear about and think about. How could we partner with a local school district to try to provide something that seems to be missing in our community? So that's the sort of feedback we really love to hear.
So staying with on the topic of working with school districts, share with us how undergraduate students are being prepared to teach and train to the vision you mentioned in the beginning about really creating this much more inclusive world that is attuned and really embracing people with disabilities.
Yeah, so this work goes back a really long time, as we said, and that's been really central to our vision, this idea that we don't want to prepare students for segregated worlds. We want to prepare students for inclusive worlds and educate and support students who are ready to teach the whole range of learners. And we do that with extensive placement experiences, with classes that are actually collaboratively taught with gen ed and special ed faculty, with opportunities to every faculty member in the inclusive education program really emphasizes the idea of teaching all students, whether they're math specialists or inclusive ed specialists. Beth actually teaches one of the, I think, in one of the really important pivotal parts in our program. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you think about that, Beth?
You want me to talk about block two? Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, because I think that's a really great example.
Yeah. So the way that we have our teacher ed program set up, I think, is really important to the ways that our pre-service teachers learn to understand inclusive education. And that is that we are teaching them right from the very beginning that it is never okay to teach just one group of kids. They always have to be thinking about how to reach all children. They always have to be thinking about how to include all kids in the general education classroom. And that the solution is never just to take kids and put them somewhere else. And so we are teaching that from the time our students come in as freshmen until the time they leave us as graduates. And we incorporate into every year our block system. And in our blocks, what we do is we teach for sort of the first month, the content and of the semester, the content and the coursework that they need. And then we have students who are embedded in school district placements. And it's really such a fantastic way for students to have this on the ground training, but also to get to really practice the skills that they're using. And so I co-teach with George Theo Harris, who teaches social studies, elementary social studies, and I teach differentiation. So I teach the special education content, he teaches the regular education content, and then we work together to co-teach that class. Students really learn how to embed special education instruction into the general education classroom and into the course content. Then they take that work and they embed it into the classrooms. We're so lucky to have our school district partners. I see that some of them are on here today, who really embrace our student teachers and bring our students into classrooms to do this work and to learn to be really excellent inclusive educators. And these students then incorporate these lessons where they're learning how to work with all students in high level expectations. And then they bring back their work to us and we really give them a lot of intensive feedback on how to improve, how to be better teachers, how to really go out into the world and teach all kids.
I would add two things to that. One is Beth alluded to this. A central organizing principle of our programs is the presumption of competence, which is the idea of starting with the assumption that all people, all students, everyone desires engagement, desires learning, and is capable of learning with the right tools and resources. So we start that right from day one. And a second key principle in our program is imagining the world as you'd like it to be while learning to work in the world as it is. So how do we affect change in school systems right now while trying to work towards a vision of inclusion that is more pervasive and more widespread? So really trying to equip our students to be change agents in the ways that they can, recognizing their locus of control, but really starting with this presumption of competence and this understanding of behavior as communicative. And I think getting that message echoed by all of the faculty is a really unique thing at Syracuse that doesn't happen everywhere. We feel really proud of the way our faculty works together to support all students.
Okay. Next question. As you talked about the Inclusive U program at Syracuse University for young people coming to college, what steps would parents of children who wanted to apply to the program? What are those steps to apply? And then could you talk a little bit about the supports that would be in place as those students were accepted and arrived on campus?
Sure. So we have an application process that mirrors the overall application of this of the university. There's an online application. You can get it from our website. And but the application asks for a few things that might be different than the typical Syracuse University application. And that's because we really know that some of our students who have intellectual disability already have a lot of barriers to attending college. And so we're not looking at a student's SAT scores or their GPA or we actually are not looking to see if they have a Regents diploma. We're not looking to see even what kind of diploma they have from high school or that they're getting. What we are really looking for is to see if a student would be a good fit for our program and if we would be able to provide the kinds of supports and services that they need to be able to be successful in their college experience and what they want to get out of college, why they might want to attend college, and what they hope for their experience. So we're really trying to get a more of a feel of fit for students who are applying to Inclusive U. So we do try to get to some of those through our application process. So our application is online, but then we schedule an interview with every student who applies. So we have an admissions team who reviews all of the applications and then schedules interviews with all of the students. So that's generally how that goes. We also have information sessions scheduled. So if you're a family who is interested in checking out Inclusive U, please give us a call or send us an email or check our website or our social media for one of our upcoming information sessions or schedule a visit or a tour with us. We would love to have you come in and visit and meet some students and meet some of our team, but also so that you can get a feel for if you think that it would be a good fit for you also. And in terms of supports and services, we really look at that from an individualized angle. So we're really looking at every student who comes in to us and thinking about what kinds of supports and services they need in order to be successful. And also thinking about the trajectory of students over a four-year college experience. What kinds of supports and services they might need their freshman year might be different from what kinds of supports they might need their senior year. And we'd love to see students need fewer supports as time goes on. So some of our students get a campus mentor, and they might have a campus mentor just for classes. Some of our students have a campus mentor for every minute they're on campus. Some of our students have a student who supports them in the dining halls, at clubs and activities, at other organizations. Some of our students need support navigating campus. Some students need support going to the gym. And some students just need support with schoolwork and homework and in the classroom. So it really depends from student to student. Some students get 8 hours per week of support and some students get 40 hours per week of support, depending on the student. We also have a peer-to-peer program, so we match up students with peer volunteers for social support, and just for times to meet up, get a coffee, go to Varsity Pizza, hang out with friends. We also offer a kind of a support system for students to attend events so that nobody feels like they have to go alone. If you want to go to a basketball game, if you want to go to Orange After Dark, if you want to go to any of the really fun and exciting things that Syracuse University offers, but you might need some support to be able to do that, we offer that as well. We also offer what we call our Inclusive U seminars. And those are times every day when we have some extra information for students. And students can sign up for seminars on a variety of things, from information on time management to sexual health to how to use the 3D printing lab to exploring the Barnes Center or navigating campus or using campus transportation. So those are sort of additional learning opportunities. Some students attend or sign up for all of them. Some students don't sign up for any. So those are optional. So I think we have, you know, I'm sure there are many others, but I'm just listing a few quickly. There's we have a pretty wide range of robust services and supports. Also, we have supports in the residence halls. So if a student wants to live fully included in the residence halls, they can have a residential mentor that might live in their room with them or in their suite or across the hall or next door. And that's like an individualized RA who can support our inclusive youth students.
That's great. Well, thank you. I think we're about the end here. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Christy, for spending this time with us and sharing just absolutely wonderful and important information. I do want to remind everybody, for those who can't attend TMR virtually, the presentations are recorded and available through the Office of Community Engagement webpage. The forums are also recorded through a partnership with WCMY Radio, and the audio versions can be found on WCMY's Thursday Morning Roundtable webpage. So thank you everyone for joining us this morning. Thank you, Christy and Beth, and we will see everyone next week.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you.